Hello, world. Welcome to Discover Your Talent, Do What You Love, number 222. I'm creator and host Don Hutchison. Every day, I interview someone from around the world who has discovered his talents to do work he loves, to create a life of success, satisfaction, and freedom. Today, I'm delighted to bring you our featured guest, Todd Herman. Welcome, Todd.
Don, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, sir. Todd, are you using your talents doing work that you love?
Most days, I definitely do.
That's an honest answer. Good. We want to hear the whole story. Todd Herman is the founder of The Peak Athlete, a mental toughness training and sports research company, advising pro and Olympic athletes for over 18 years. He's also creator of the 90-Day Year program, a goal achievement system used by athletes, entrepreneurs, and high-profile companies, as well as government agencies around the world. Well, Todd, that's a brief summary of your career to date. Tell us what you are up to now that has you engaged.
Yeah, right now, I mean, you kind of alluded to it, but for the longest time, I've been working with athletes on essentially the 6 inches between their ears and spending a lot of my time in that world. And then more recently, in the last probably 5 years, I've been slowly building up and working a lot more with entrepreneurs and high-achieving individuals in that realm and launching the 90-Day Year into that space where it was typically in the sports and corporate space before that. It has been a blast because entrepreneurs and athletes, essentially the mental makeup are just very, very similar. And it's been a blast working with entrepreneurs and helping them scale up their businesses and essentially just getting their mindset right with how they're approaching things. So the 90-Day Year and its online education platform has been growing quickly over the last year and a half. And now I'm building out coaching and certification programs to help put that into the hands of just great business coaches around the world. So that's been a big part of my focus in the last little bit. I also have a venture capital company where I'm doing a lot of investing into female-backed ventures. If you don't know it already, females are the best entrepreneurs to put your money behind.
So listen, I couldn't be more in favor of that and more supportive. I think that's great. I think the 90-Day Year is a brilliant title, by the way.
Honestly, it came out of just the science of, you know, how we were able to work with athletes and just rapidly improve their performance. And that came down to essentially what in the sports space, we called them 90-day sprints.
Okay.
Because sprint is obviously a word that we are familiar with in athletics. And just because of this constrained focus that we were working with athletes on, it kind of gathered the attention of a lot of executives who we were sort of working with, maybe because of the fact that I was working with their kids, and they started asking me, well, can we apply this to the corporate world? And then I just changed essentially the word sprint around to year, because in our world, we understand things on the basis of a calendar.
Yes.
So that's how it shifted over about 14 years ago.
Yes, wonderful. Well, as you know, everyone's life is composed of turning points. Every 5 or 6 years, we face issues and obstacles and challenges that we have to deal with to move forward. And we're interested in knowing from you the turning points that got you here today. What makes Todd Herman Todd Herman? So go as far back as you want to in your storyline and just tell us about your upbringing and some of the lessons and mentors and experiences you had.
Well, I mean, I'd have to start easily with the fact that I'm a proud farm and ranch kid from Western Canada. I grew up on a big farm and ranch outside of Medicine Hat, Alberta, down in the southeastern corner of the province of Alberta.
Medicine Hat, Alberta. I love that name. I've never heard that. Medicine Hat, Alberta. Okay.
That's right. Medicine Hat, Alberta. If there's anything that Canadians do well is we love really unique names for our towns. Moose Jaw, Swift Current, whatever the case is. So, so I grew up there. And I mean, it was there that I was lucky. I'm one of those fortunate people who got just won the lottery when it came to my parents and, you know, got to see the value of tremendous hard work and having outstanding name in your area. My just integrity sort of bled through the family that way. So that was kind of, you know, I had those great foundational values, I think, set up at an early age. So essentially the foundational piece that really helped me out in my entrepreneurial world was it was just the power of finding a great mentor at a very young age when I was just getting started with my essentially consulting business that I'd started when I was around 22 and coaching business. And I ran into a gentleman by the name of Jim Rohn. He was speaking, he was the keynote speaker at an event, and I happened to be sitting at the head table and didn't know who he was at the time, but he took a liking to me and sort of gave me some tips and some ideas as to what I should be doing next and gave me a bit of a challenge and said, you know, if you do these three things, just give me a call when you're done them. And that was on a Saturday. And I called him on Monday in the early afternoon and said, hey, Jim, it's Todd Herman. I don't know if you remember me, but I completed all those things. Now what do I do? And because I had basically taken so much action so quickly, he said, okay, well, I'll help you out. And then it eventually turned into more of a mentorship type role that he had with me. So
that's amazing.
Easily it was getting around someone who had already done what I was trying to do and him shepherding me along the process to just speed up any friction that I would have put in my own way that shouldn't have been there.
So what did he tell you to do?
Well, the three things he told me to do, because right at that time, it was more of an idea more than it was really a business. And so he said, first thing you need to do is go down to your city hall and register the name of your business. Second thing is take that registered name of your business and go to a bank and open up a business bank account. And then the third thing you need to do is call two of your friends, two associates that you know either have an audience who you can go out and talk to about this topic or could put you in touch with someone that could bring you in. And I made those two phone calls. One person I left a voicemail and the other person I talked to on the phone, and they absolutely wanted to bring me in and do this mini workshop to their teams on the subject. And that was basically it. It was very simple. It was very actionable. But when I take a look back at talking to startup entrepreneurs or people who want to get into this, giving them those little tiny actions of, hey, go and actually register the business name. It starts this momentum of just activity, because so many people get caught up in this paralysis from analysis and they don't know all of the things that they should be doing if they would just start somewhere. So he was a great coach that way. He started me somewhere and it just moved me along the path.
Yes, yes. That's just amazing. He's a legend, to say the least. And the fact that you got to connect with him at 22 is that's a great piece of serendipity.
Yeah, I got to basically talk with him almost every single month until the month that he passed away in December of 2009. So,
oh, my word. That's beautiful. Well, what happened next in the story?
Well, from there, just like anything, like I started out with the idea of one business and I was doing some other volunteering on the side. This is how the sports one came out. So that one that I started was more around consulting in the hospitality space, because I had won an award up in Canada on sort of like restaurant manager of the year with the group that I was in. And, you know, other restaurant owners, because they were friends, asked me, you know, what my secret sauce was, kind of thing. And I did that for a while and I loved it because I love the hospitality space, but I was also doing some volunteering coaching with athletes at the time. And I was a college football player and a nationally ranked badminton player. And my strength was really my mental game, because it wasn't like I was a physically gifted athlete, but I was able to pull, you know, a lot of talent and skill out of myself because of just my approach mentally to sport. And so when I was working with these younger athletes, I would tell them, like, you don't need to work any harder. It's not that you lack the hard work or the skill, it's that it's not showing up on the field of play because you're not preparing properly for your games. You don't have routines built into it. You're not really setting proper goals for yourself. And all of that affects your focus on the field. So a good friend of mine back in Canada, his name is Eric Morissette. He's one of the top hockey trainers in the world. Okay. He has a hockey academy. And he said, you know, would you mind coming in and talking to my kids about this mental stuff? You just seem to know it so well. And I said, yeah, absolutely. And it was just, it wasn't a business. It was just me going and talking about this thing that I was maybe a little bit good at teaching. And that, those first couple of speeches that I did, parents started saying, would you mentor my son or daughter on this? How much would you charge? And I mean, I never really knew of anyone that was a mental toughness coach. It wasn't my world by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I don't know if this is even a business, but let me try and validate it over the course of the next 90 days. Let me just see if I go out and do as many talks as I possibly can, because I'm a 4-H kid. You know, and if you don't know what 4-H is, it's basically agricultural Boy Scouts, essentially.
Right, right.
And so I went out and I did as many speeches as I could throughout the 90 days across my province of Alberta, just to get this message that I had out there of what I called the triune athlete, the mentally, emotionally, and physically tough athlete, which when you have someone who's aligned, those three things are in alignment, you develop these amazing leaders. And sport is a fantastic conduit to develop great leaders. And that was really my ultimate message, was wherever sport ends up taking you, to whatever levels, whether it's college and professional ranks, whatever those might be, at the end of the day, sport in and of itself, just the ecosystem of it, can turn you into a great producer in our world. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up doing 68 speeches in 90 days throughout my province.
How in the world did you do that?
It sounds like it'd be impossible, but it's actually quite simple. And I'll explain. I'll tell you flat out what it was. I did the same thing that Jim taught me. I contacted two people I knew who could bring me in to talk. And I booked those talks. And what I said to them was, now I'll come in and do the talks for free, but here's what I need. I need the parents to be there as well, because this is actually a bad market to be in, because I'm delivering the service to the young athlete, but the parent is paying for it.
Right.
Typically, that's not the best market to be in. Right. So I need the credit card in the room, essentially. Right. And this was back in the late 90s, early 2000s. And so I ended up going out and doing a free talk, talking about this concept and mental toughness. And parents would come to the front and ask me, you know, about working with their son or daughter, or they would say, hey, can you work with the team? But the key thing that I would say at the end of my talk was, listen, over the next 90 days, I'm doing as many of these free workshops as I possibly can. And I know many of you parents at the back of the room, you've got other sons and daughters that are in other sports, other teams possibly, and they weren't here tonight. So if you'd love me to come out and do a talk to your group or their group, you know, come see me afterwards and we can get something onto the schedule. Mm-hmm. So, and there's a lot of powerful things that are happening there. One was there was a deadline, you know, they could get a free talk in the next 90 days, right? And I wasn't even explicitly, I didn't think about that as a strategy ahead of time. Looking back, now I know the power of kind of what I was saying. Mm-hmm. But I was also, I had a captive audience at the time. So I, you know, had my next call to action, which was, you know, bring me in for the talk. So I did 4 speeches in the first 2 weeks. That was the number. And then that just kept on cycling up and cycling up. And, you know, by the end of the 90 days, I was doing 3 or 4 talks some days in the province. And wow. Yeah, and basically, I mean, I never really had to market that business ever since, because I did so much targeted, focused, good, smart activity up front that it just built, sort of lifted that rocket ship off the ground and launched it into orbit, and it needed very little fuel to keep it going.
That's beautifully expressed. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, as you know, the data points on statistics from Gallup and other big research firms is that in these exhaustive surveys with hundreds of thousands of people in literally a couple of hundred countries, people are not in their sweet spot. 80-some percentile in the around the world, and even in America, it's in the 70 percentiles. Only 1% of people say they love what they do. So, okay, it's a complicated world. We have pressures. We have family. We have all kinds of issues. So we understand. But what is it about that problem? What's the main cause of that? Why can't people get, here you are, a mental toughness coach. Mm-hmm. So what is it about that, whether you're 18 or 80? Where do people get stuck?
I think one of the places they get stuck is, one, they're planting their seeds in a field that isn't fertile for who they are or what the kind of DNA of that, of what they are. Like an example, if you wanted to start a fashion brand and you were living in Topeka, Kansas, Topeka, Kansas isn't the most fertile field for you to start that type of business in. And so I think, like, many times, I think the personal development world goes way too quickly towards, oh, it's your belief system. And, you know, I've worked with literally the highest performers on the planet when it comes to sports. You know, I've worked with a few billionaires, and they just, they're more aware of, listen, if I want to be great at something, I need to be around greatness. That's just the way that it is. So, and then there's just the environment. You know, your environment will dictate a lot of the success that you're going to be able to yield from whatever it is that you're trying to go after. So that fashion business would be far better served to be going to an epicenter like New York City, or an epicenter like Milan or Paris or London. And now all of a sudden the seed, which is them, whatever their goal is or their wish is for their business, has a far better chance of taking hold in that space. So I think, you know, you got to look at your environment. Are you in a space right now where the talents and skills that you have can actually bear fruit for you? Mm-hmm. The second thing is just lack of awareness. I don't think many people even know what their skills and abilities really are. They're not very self-aware individuals. If there's one thing that having a great coach or a great mentor like Jim was around, is he was constantly shining, putting up a mirror in front of me and, you know, holding me accountable to, like, why are you doing that? That's not who Todd Herman really is. So
that's so brilliant. That's so funny. You know, Peter Drucker, of course, the great, great, great guru.
Yeah.
Well, do you know his quote? Most people think they know what they're good at. They're usually wrong.
Yeah.
Have you heard that?
Exactly. Isn't
that
great? Totally.
He goes on to say they don't even know what they're not good at. So your point is exactly spot on.
Yeah. And I mean, the other side of it was, I mean, I had another mentor who Jim was an accidental mentor, whereas because of the value I was getting from Jim, like Jim was teaching me a lot about kind of the speaking world or just the thought leadership space and being kind of known. But then I still needed to develop the competencies of being a great mental toughness coach in sport. So there's a gentleman by the name of Harvey Dorfman. He wrote the book Coaching the Mental Game, one of the great Bibles of mental toughness and revered in the world of baseball. I mean, his name is basically gold in that world. They refer to him oftentimes as Yoda. And I basically reached out to him. I called him and just said, Harvey, I absolutely love the way that you teach the concept of developing a tough athlete. He's very much like myself, where it's pretty matter of fact. It's straight shoot from the hip. There's no kind of fluff around unproven psychological stuff, essentially. Right. And I just said, you know, I know that by very nature of you running a private practice, you probably have 100 projects, especially with your level of visibility that you would love to get to, but you just can't because, you know, there's just things that get in your way. I'd love to come down and volunteer and be around you for the next 30 days and take some of that other stuff off your plate so you can kind of sink your teeth into some of these other things. And, you know, we kind of went back and forth a little bit. He called me back and was like, hey, well, who are you and what do you want? And why are you want to do this? And I said, well, I'm starting out and I'm a big believer in just following the best of the best. And after some back and forth, and, you know, one of his big concerns was, you're not expecting to live with me, are you? And I told him, because he lived in North Carolina and I was in Alberta. And I told him that I know I've got an aunt and uncle that live in North Carolina and I'm going to stay with them. And so that really took a lot of the pressure off of him. The reality was I didn't have an uncle down there. There was a Motel 6 that was $29 a night. That's where I actually stayed. But I felt like if I told him that I was going to be staying in a Motel 6, he was going to still take some personal responsibility for me. Right. And that would probably create some level of resistance in him wanting to, you know, work with me or come bring me down. Anyways, long story short, I worked side by side with him. And I saw, you know, when some of the biggest names in baseball came down as a pilgrimage to come meet with him for an entire day, how he conducted a coaching session with them, what he talked about with them, what the concerns were of a real high level pro athlete. Because I wasn't working with high level pro athletes at that point in time yet. And I mean, I could have never gotten that education from a book. It would have taken me 12 to 15 years to get that stuff on my own. And I saw it in 30 days.
What were the biggest takeaways that you can share?
Biggest takeaways right away. I mean, because I get this question about my pro athletes all the time. Like, what do you talk about with them? And it's the same as what Harvey talked to them about. About 80% of the content of the conversation wraps around just managing the stuff that's happening off the field. You know, the parents or the friends or the wives or the whatever the case is, just the life of being a pro athlete. And nowadays it's even more difficult than when even 12, 15 years ago, just the expectation from people nowadays of the access they think they deserve to a pro athlete is just absolutely stupid. You know, you don't own that person. Just because they signed, you know, whatever deal doesn't make them accountable to you by any stretch of the imagination. It's that society right now, the way that it's built, values that activity at a high rate. Not that athlete's problem. It's not their fault that that's the way it is. Yeah. And yet the level of people's thinking that they think that, no, because that person earns that amount of money that they need to do something for me or I get access to them because it's just, it's silly.
How do you coach the athlete to be able to respectfully turn down those requests and those pressures to keep, set good boundaries? How do you tell them to set good boundaries?
So I work with the people around them. You know, for example, I talk about with all my athletes, the importance of the 5-hour window. And there's a 5-hour window that we really manage before competition. And it's not 6 hours and it's not 4 hours. 5 hours is the number because the data tells us this because we track a lot of this stuff. So when you see an athlete who doesn't perform to their typical consistent level in a game, I can tell you almost bar none that the reason that they're not performing that day is because something interrupted the 5-hour routine before that event. So let's say, for example, the athlete and their wife or the athlete and their husband, depending on who the athlete is, got into a big fight the day before. And they're 3 hours before competition and that person sends them a text message like, I can't believe that you know, left the house today without saying da 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 da. And if that athlete engages with that conversation, it will start to unravel the routines that we really work hard on for game prep. So it's important that I go and talk to the wife or the husband and say, and what I do is I enlist their help. Right. I don't accuse them of anything. Right. I say, listen, I'm working with Dawn right now on managing this 5-hour window. And I explain from a scientific perspective why it's really important that we manage this. And they get on board with it. And I say, so what I need help from you is because you and I both know that there's a lot of people around Dawn that want things from him. Now, I'm not accusing that person of it. They're now my enlisted help.
Yes.
And so if you could just help us manage this group, or, you know, if someone sends you a message saying, hey, do you think I could reach out to Don, you know, before the game so I could see about, you know, bringing my son down to meet him, you would automatically say, no, let me take care of that. And so that's like one of the little things that we would use with an athlete.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. It's perfect. So, I mean, that's just learning that from Harvey at such a young age, and then being able to go and apply that, you know, so that when I am talking to my first ever pro athlete client as a possibility, and I can explain to them that I know and I get their world, they're like, well, of course, this is the guy I need to work with.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So when did you get your first high level pro athlete?
It was actually very fast because of that activity that I did so early on with the speaking. One of my first clients, Brandon, his cousin was a rookie in the NHL. And Brandon, after him and I working for a little while together, was getting such great results that his aunt, so Brandon's mom, reached out to his cousin and said, listen, Brandon's working with this mental toughness guy and his confidence is really taking off. And this young guy who was in the pros was really struggling with just the transition of getting into the groove of being a pro and what that meant. And so anyways, from basically the word of mouth of his aunt, he reached out and that was kind of it. And I kind of got really lucky with my first client in some ways, in that many people, when they would find me, would think of me more as their secret weapon. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't want to share that with anybody
else. Oh, I see that. Yeah.
So, you know, because it's competition and, right. And I get that. I totally understood that.
Right.
But this particular person wasn't that way. He was a good evangelist for me and mm-hmm. he put me in touch with another few people and that just snowballed. And so I started working with a lot of pro athletes very quickly, which doesn't happen. But that was on the back of me getting back to your talent thing.
Right.
I know I'm a good speaker. I'm very comfortable on stage. It's as comfortable as me to be up there as it is to be sitting, you know, here with you or sitting on a couch watching a TV show or something like that. There is no anxiety that I get. And a lot of that was because of my 4-H upbringing where, you know, you had to do speeches, but it's also a part of just who I am,
right.
A part of my personality as well.
Right, exactly.
So I've always organized a lot of, and when I take a look at the marketing activities that I could do to get this message out to people, there's any number of activities. Writing could be one. I have dyslexia. I struggled for a long time with writing. So even though the world of thought leadership sort of says, well, you got to have a best-selling book and you got to be writing a lot. Well, that's not for everybody.
No.
And I've managed to build up multi-million dollar coaching and consulting companies on the back of never having a book out there. So whoever says to people that you got to have a best-selling book, you know, that's not true. But what you do need to have is a medium where you can take the media out to.
Yes.
My medium was getting on stages.
Oh, man, so, it's perfect. I can see that clearly. So what aspects of your life have been most affected by you choosing to use your talents and having the grit and the guts to do the things you've done to chisel out a life on your own terms?
Quality relationships, easily. Just fortunate to have just some A players around me, whether it's my close friends, being able to, I mean, one of my big values is traveling and experiencing the world. And I've managed to be able to work in 82 countries and around the world, from Kazakhstan to Nigeria to Saudi Arabia to Indonesia, all the way to Brazil and Copenhagen or Denmark. And so that has been a huge part of it and allowed me to find my wife and have my two little girls because of the choices that I made around doing what I love. And honestly, it's been the really great part has been really seeing the difference between how truly successful people, and I'm not talking about just monetarily, but people who are really playing to the top of the game, whatever their game is, how they think, how they act differently, and how the advice that's typically given out to people who are saying to get there is very different than the reality.
Mm-hmm.
Than the reality, because I can tell people flat out that a lot of the stuff that's been bandied around for about 80 to 90 to 100 years in the sun, that kind of success teaching space, is just very, very different than the reality of what these people have done. Yeah.
I think that makes complete sense.
I'll give you a good example.
Please.
If you don't mind. So, you know, one big thing that's out there right now is the idea of you got to work smart. And I agree with that. I think working smart's important, but there is no substitute for working hard.
Right.
There is no substitute for working hard. And a lot of them, and I think a lot of the stories that people like to use to sort of downplay the idea of working hard is they lean on the fact that, oh, my dad was a coal or someone I know is a coal miner. And he worked hard. He worked really hard every day. But you know what he was? He was poor. And if you would have just thought, you know, like, I think that's just rude to say that about a class of people
yes.
who their desires aren't to be entrepreneurs. Their desires aren't to be certain things. And I think that that's, it also puts down kind of your family heritage. My dad worked his freaking ass off on the farm and ranch, but he also built up an amazing operation. So he did work smart at the same time. Here's what I can't do as an advisor or a coach to someone. I can't take someone who is fundamentally lazy right now and loves the idea of working smart and turn them into someone who's going to be successful. Can't
right.
do it.
Right.
What I can do is take someone who's been busting their butt, hustling hard and working hard, and give them some strategies to think, act, behave smarter. That is someone I can change. Can't do it with someone who's lazy.
No, absolutely. Cannot even think about it. I agree with you. So just in a minute, you've given us so many penetrating insights. You've learned from such really great leaders in so many fields. But how would you boil down in a minute or less a few lessons that would help our listeners on their journeys?
One is take the time each day to sort of reflect on your activities. What are you doing? You know, because like I said before, most people don't know who they are. And to tell you to like sit down and write in a journal in 1 hour and, you know, follow a couple of questions, you're not going to get that insight. You need some data over some time, you know? So it's just simply like, hey, what did I do today? And on a scale of 1 to 10, how would you rank the quality of your day? You know, like, did you love it? So was it a 5 today? And then do that for a month. Do that for a month. And then just go back through and see, you know, those days that I ranked myself a 2, what was I doing on those days? The days that I thought were an 8 or a 9 or a 10 or even a 7, what was the content of those days? I know for myself that when I spend the majority of my day talking to people, you know, whether it's clients or, you know, doing this with you, Don, it's a great day because I love building new relationships. That is my powerhouse wheel right there.
Excellent. One book. Give us one book.
I'm going to butcher it. I don't know why I'm.
it's all right.
Yeah. Wisdom, Darwin de Munger.
That's all right. We'll find it and put it in the show notes. So
yeah,
whatever it is, it's about wisdom. Who's the author?
I can't tell you the author's name. And it's funny because I refer this book out to people 100 times. So
it doesn't matter. We'll keep it in the interview. We'll figure it out. Okay. Sounds perfect. We're running up on our time here. So what are you proudest of?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
I know. I know. I have to ask it.
I would say the thing I'm proudest of is when I was 8 years old, I was walking on our farm and never ever saw a picture of New York City, but I'd heard of the idea of New York City. And I resolved at that age that I was going to live there. And then now, you know, you fast forward 24 years or something like that later, and I was living in New York City and still do. So A farm kid from outside of Medicine Hat, Alberta, to making it to the big city of New York is one thing I'm very proud that I was able to do. So
you have many things to be proud of, my new friend. Todd Herman, what a great pleasure being with you today. We appreciate you sharing the highlights of your remarkable life journey, and I know that listeners around the world have learned lessons that will help them on theirs. So how do those listeners connect with you?
Yeah, they can connect with me at toddherman.me, that's .me, or Twitter and all that other good stuff is Todd_Herman.
Right.
And yeah, I've got some good things for everybody. But, you know, Don, thank you for giving me a platform to share some of the stuff with people.
It's been a very illuminating conversation, and I know listeners are going to enjoy it for a long time. Listeners, of course, you know, you can go to discoveryourtalentpodcast.com, go to the podcast section, and you'll see the highlights and show notes of this very fine interview with Todd, along with the connecting points that he just alluded to. Also, the book that he couldn't remember, but it's a very important book in his life, and we want you to know about it, so we'll figure that out. Thank you, listeners across the world, for joining us. And if you go to our website, you know we have an infographic, What Do Highly Successful People Actually Do to Succeed, 12 Proven Career Building Strategies that Help You Do What You Love. These are thinkers, men and women that have been around for decades or longer who have figured out some basics. Todd's really talked about many of those in his talk today. And it's free. It's an infographic that leads to an ebook, and it might just be a Kickstarter for you. We've had great feedback to it, so please look that up if you will. You can also subscribe for free on iTunes and Stitcher. If you like interviews like this, then join our tribe. We'd like to know how we can serve you better. Finally, every one of us is born with unique talents and gifts. We don't learn them. We cannot ignore them. They're just a part of who we are, our DNA. Whenever we discover them and use them in our lives and careers, we do not merely survive, we thrive in every way possible. So until next time, all my best, and whatever you do, have fun out there today. Thank you.